AEW had a hot crowd in Cardiff, Wales. This was the first episode of Dynamite ever outside of North America. And they had, not only was it a loud crowd, but it was a sold out crowd. They had over 4,000 fans in the venue tonight for the go home episode of Dynamite. This was the final Dynamite before Wembley this Sunday. And I have to tell you, you know, as far as go home shows are concerned, all I ask for is a show that really gets me pumped up and excited to watch the pay-per-view this weekend. And tonight, AEW did about as good of a job as you possibly could have asked for as far as a go-home show before All In. I thought they did a fantastic job, especially with their key matches. Two best segments on the entire show focused on the AEW World Championship match between Swerve Strickland and Bryan Danielson. That is our main event coming up on Sunday. And the international title, or American title, whatever you want to call it, between MJF and Will Ospreay. Those two segments, we had two showdowns between those four men, and those two segments were the highlight of the night. I thought those two segments, especially the MJF-Ospreay segment, both of them were excellent. And we also had a Continental Championship match with Kazuchika Okada defending his title against Claudio Castagnoli. I'm still very surprised that Okada, being one of the big names in AEW and all the other members of the Elite having matches on Sunday, that Okada does not. But we got his match tonight. It was excellent as expected. Although, still some question about who the better man is because we did not get a winner. We did not get a clean, clear-cut winner tonight between those two, which leaves the door open for a rematch. I don't think it's going to happen on Sunday. Could be added at the last minute. I mean, it's possible. You know, they could announce something on social media. They could announce it on Rampage Friday night or Collision on Saturday. But it does not look like we are going to get either of those two men unless they pop up in the Gauntlet match. And we found out one of the big names in the Gauntlet match this Sunday for a future shot at the AEW World Championship. It really shouldn't be much of a surprise. But now we know what the Hangman will be doing on Sunday. I'm excited for All In. I think the card, you know, you look at the card on paper, I think it's a strong card. But the key matches, they really have done a very good job of promoting. The main event, the international title match, the AEW Women's World Championship match. And I'll tell you one other match I'm really looking forward to on this show, the TNT title match. The build-up for that match, not nearly as good as the other matches I just mentioned. But Jack Perry and Darby Allin are going in there on Sunday. They're going to have a coffin match. And Darby Allin did an interview this week and said, you know, I get asked about why. Why a coffin match? Why go to the extreme and just, you know, add that stipulation? And he made it very clear. He said, look, I've set this man on fire. I have beaten him bloody in the cage, right, of blood and guts. I don't want this to go beyond Wembley. This is not a program that I want to have with Jack Perry. I want this to be one and done. This is it. So we're going all in on Sunday. We're having a coffin match, and this is going to be it. I'm going to walk out with the TNT title. You know what? That's as good of an explanation as I think you can come up with. He didn't say it on TV. But that is why we are getting that match on Sunday, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that and the show overall. You know, Tony Khan, it's funny. He likes to talk about how AEW is where the best wrestle. That's like their slogan now. And back in the day, with WCW, it was where the big boys play. And in AEW, is where the best wrestle. And it's kind of ironic that that would be their tagline when tonight this show was carried by the promos. Not that we didn't get good wrestling, but that really is what carried the day here for this go-home show tonight. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, August 21st, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. And I want to wish a very happy 30th birthday to one of our esteemed channel members, Alberto, who has been a channel member for a very long time. Happy birthday, brother. I hope that you got everything you wanted. And now you get to get, you get me, the best gift of all. You get a sound-off review here on YouTube. You can't beat that. So let's start from the very top here with Tony Schiavone, who is in the ring to introduce Britt Baker and Mercedes Moné for the contract signing for for the TBS Championship match coming up on Sunday at Wembley Stadium. Shivani noted that Monet and Baker agreed to no physicality, and Mercedes said that she will force Britt to tap out on Sunday and said that it would prove that Baker is the past while she is the future. And with that, Mercedes went ahead. Of course, she had Camille with her. I should mention that. And of course, Mercedes went and signed the contract. Britt Baker recalled Mercedes 1 year ago at Wembley Stadium, sitting in the crowd. She was injured. She was walking around on crutches while watching her at last year's All In. And Britt said that before there was a CEO, there was a DMD. Mercedes said the fans like Britt because they see themselves in her, a loser, to which the crowd in Cardiff regaled her with chants of, shut the fuck up. Mercedes boasted that she's been putting women's wrestling on the map, and that is All In. She said Baker doesn't have the guts to go All In like her and will never be her, nor would she beat her on Sunday. And Britt said that she has the guts, she has the heart, she has the balls. Good to know. She referred to herself as the gold standard. She said that while Mercedes was considered one of four, she is one of one. The baddest bitch on the block. She said that she admired Mercedes and wanted to be her. She said Mercedes walked so girls like her could run. She said that Mercedes made a difference, but that person that she's talking about, that woman doesn't exist anymore. She went away. She's not here. She said Mercedes is a smug, arrogant ass who cares more about being the highest paid female than being a role model. Role model. Every time I hear that. Every time I hear that, I think of fucking Def Rebel and Bailey. Role model. Can't get that out of my head. She says she doesn't know where that Mercedes went, but she hopes that she finds her. And Britt said that that's the girl she wants to be able to say that she beat. So she stood up, and Mercedes got a little anxious because, again, the rules were no physicality. And Britt said, look, don't worry. I'm going to follow the rules that we agreed to, and I'm not going to hit you. She said, but this bitch is getting on my nerves. And she bopped Camille in the head with the microphone. I mean, this was like a love tap is what this was. It was just the way she tapped her on the head was just funny to me. Remember was it Hogan with Conan in WCW once, the way he kind of bopped him in the head with a chair? So Britt slammed Camille's head on the table, then climbed up on top of the desk, and then dove onto Camille, who fell backwards into Mercedes, who was in her office chair, and the chair fell over. So does that technically count as physicality? See, technically she didn't touch Mercedes, though. She touched Camille, and Camille then touched Mercedes. So I guess that's okay. That, I guess, is permissible. So they fell backwards and the heels fled the ring and Britt held up the TBS title. So that's more like it. A good segment here, right? Nothing outstanding or anything. A pretty simple segment, but this was more like what I was expecting and hoping from these two. I said last week, what did I say last week on the review? Remember what I said? I said maybe they could do a contract signing this week and they can have a stipulation that there's no physicality between the two. That way you get them both in the ring, like you did at the very beginning of all this, when they had that first segment on Dynamite together, and it was just the two of them standing face-to-face cutting promos on each other, and we can have that. You don't have to worry about them, you know, getting into a brawl or anything like that. That's exactly what we got here on the show. We got the contract signing. We got the no physicality provision. It was the logical thing to do. Get them back in the ring. Let them rip into each other. Again, Britt outshined Mercedes on the microphone. This has been a common theme, I think, in most of their segments together, going back to the very first one. You know, Britt has outshined her each and every single time, including that one week where she was suspended and they had her up on the Tron and she was at home or wherever she was and she cut that promo. So I thought she did that again here. And Mercedes was fine. You know, she wasn't terrible in this segment, but Britt, I thought, was better. But Mercedes got good heat from the crowd. This was a hot crowd anyway, but she got good heat from the fans here in Cardiff. I liked Britt's line. She had that one line in the promo where she said that Mercedes is considered one of four, but she is one of one. I like that line. I thought that was the money line in the promo. Because it's true in many ways. I mean, for so many years, Mercedes, Sasha, whatever you want to call her, was linked with those other three women. It was Charlotte and Sasha and Becky and Bayley, and they were just, and I think to some degree they will forever be linked together because they all came up at the same time. And they came up at a time where, as Britt alluded to in this promo, you know, they were an inspiration to many women who were on the roster at the time coming up, but also women who were watching on TV as fans who were not yet in the business or were not yet in WWE. They came up at a time, 2015, 2016, where women's wrestling, certainly in that company, but women's wrestling, I think, in general, was changing, and it was getting more of a spotlight than it had ever gotten before. And so she will always be linked with those other ladies no matter what, no matter how many years go by. But then Britt to say, you know, I'm one of one. When this company started, she was the alpha female. You know, it really was Britt Baker. She was the one who was on all the advertisements. And when they had media events and press conferences and they rolled out the red carpet for that first press conference to announce the company, Britt was the one. And it's pretty much been that way now for 5 years. So I like that line. And I thought this was as good of a segment as you could expect from these two. There was nothing left for them to do. You know, I've said the suspension didn't help. But over the last few weeks, it just kind of felt like they ran out of good ideas on what to do with them to get them to All In. And so I thought what they had here was a good opening segment. We had the Learning Tree. Chris Jericho, one-on-one with the Dynamite Kid. No, not that Dynamite Kid. The Dynamite Kid, Tommy Billington, the 23-year-old nephew of the Dynamite Kid, making his Dynamite debut. Now, this was not his AEW debut. This was because he's had some matches recently on TV, Collision, some of the other shows with Dax Harwood and Konosuke Takeshita, and he has impressed in those matches. Now, again, he's in the ring with quality talent, so it helps to be in the ring with people like, you know, Harwood and Takeshita. But he's been in the ring with them. He's impressed. And apparently, this has not been confirmed by AEW. He has not gotten the graphic, I don't believe. But the belief is that Tony Khan has signed Mr. Billington to a contract. Now, I know he had interest as well from NXT, as you would expect, especially as young as he is. I'm sure they would love to have him. But the belief is that he is all elite. So we may be seeing more of him on TV in the months to come. Now, and if so, I don't know if it's a full-time deal. I don't know if it's a per-appearance type deal. Again, nothing has been confirmed yet by AEW, but that is the belief. But I will say this. He is a spitting image of his uncle. Hopefully not as a human being. As a wrestler, that's one thing. As a human being, let's hope not. But watching him in the ring, it's impossible not to see dynamite. You could tell, obviously, that he was influenced by his uncle's style. He uses a lot of the same moves. His movements and mannerisms are very similar to Dynamite. Now, he is still very green, but you could tell, you know, young as he is, there's potential there. Billington showed off with some quick arm drags and a slam at the beginning before going up top for a missile drop kick. Jericho took a powder outside. Billington went out after him, but as Jericho slid back into the ring, he was distracting Aubrey Edwards long enough for Big Bill to send Billington into the post. That took us into a commercial break. Jericho controlled during the break. When they came back, both men collided into a double crossbody. I'm thinking of Terry Funk. At the Double Cross Ranch. No, it was a double cross body attempt. Billington was up first. Jericho responded, though, with a lion salt for two. Walls of Jericho were applied. Billington, though, got to the ropes. He dropped Jericho with a standing tombstone and then headed up top for the diving headbutt, I would assume, because he didn't do it. Instead, he turned and he hit a flying cross body to Brian Keith out on the floor. Then he sidestepped a charging Big Bill who went right into the barricade. Billington went back up to the top. He jumped off and Jericho caught him with a code breaker in midair and pinned him. So Boom goes the Dynamite. It is a win for Chris Jericho. It is a loss for the Dynamite Kid, but I thought it was a fun opener. This was the right match, I think, for this crowd, because the crowd was behind Billington. They were into it. They were rooting him on. They were hot throughout the match. Now, after the match was over, Jericho took the mic, and he called Hook a stupid bastard who he said he hoped was watching. Jericho said that he would rip Hook apart branch by branch. Hook's music hit. He power walked down to the ring, got right in Jericho's face, but got blindsided by Big Bill. And this big bitch, he got Hook way up into the air for a massive chokeslam. He chokeslammed this kid so hard that his bandage went flying off his head. He's got that bandage over his eye because he was blinded by Jericho like a month ago with a fireball. He hit so hard, the bandage fell off. And we were supposed to get a match tonight, if you remember, between Hook and Big Bill. That was made last week, but that match has now been bumped to Collision instead. We had Timeless Toni Storm defending the AEW Women's World Championship against Saraya, who had Harley Cameron in her corner. Well, this was a championship match. Boy, that would have ruined Wembley on Sunday. Maybe the match I'm looking forward to the most. Certainly the best promoted, I think, of all the matches. Just in terms of the rich story that's involved here. And all it was going to take was 3 seconds, and the whole thing could have been blown up here because Saraya could have walked away with the championship. Boy, that would have fucked things up. No, nobody expected that there was going to be a title change here. Frankly, I don't know why we had a championship match here. I really don't. This woman is defending her title in 4 days in one of the most promoted, heavily promoted matches on that card. And why she would be defending her championship 4 days before that on TV doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Okada, at least, he's not even on the fucking show on Sunday, so I get it. Because that may be all he gets. So it was weird that we were even having this as a title match. Non-title, I could understand. But this was the battle of the former outcasts, these two very familiar with each other. Saraya hung Toni up in the ropes before taking the referee. That allowed Harley to send Toni into the barricade. And Saraya followed with a somersault senton off the apron. That took us into the commercial break. Saraya avoided Storm Zero and countered with the Nightcat for a near fall. Saraya brought Toni up in the corner and delivered a sunset flip powerbomb, followed by her cradle DDT for another two. Took too long to follow up, and Toni was able to hit a choke bomb. Harley, though, jumped up on the apron, only for Toni to walk up to Harley Cameron, grab her by the head, and plant a wet one on her. And that got the fans going. Saraya charged in, accidentally collided with Harley Cameron, knocking her to the floor. Toni then gave Saraya a kiss as well. I don't know why she didn't give the referee a kiss while she was at it. But she gave her a kiss, I guess the kiss of death. Kind of like Katrina's lick of death in Lucha Underground. I do miss that. And then she hit Storm Zero to win the match and retain the title. As Toni was celebrating her win, Mariah May blindsided her with the shoe, the same white high-heeled shoe that Mariah used to bloody Toni on TV at that fantastic angle all those many weeks ago. She walloped her in the head with it, and then with Toni on the mat, Mariah cradled her and kissed her on the forehead and then headed to the back. A lot of kissing in this segment. I'm noticing a lot of kissing here. Kissing on the lips, kissing on the head. They're a very, very touchy bunch here. You know, 1 year ago, Wembley, Saraya won that very championship. She became the AEW Women's World Champion. She got her moment in Wembley in front of her fans, in front of her family. That really was the peak of her career in this company. This year, she's not even on the show. Now, you may have seen some news reports going around. I think Fightful had a report about Saraya's contract status, and apparently her contract is up next month, And both sides have been talking about a possible extension or renewal for another year. My guess is she ends up staying in AEW. I think that Tony Khan, you know, probably wants to keep her. We had a discussion about this on TNT last night. Look, her run has been very underwhelming. Okay, I know she won the title last year. That was her token win in England, and she got it, and she held the title for a few months. Saraya's run has been very underwhelming. I didn't expect her to be back full-time on TV wrestling every week. You know, she came back from a very serious injury. WWE wouldn't clear her for years. WWE does not want people under contract that they pay who can't work. So obviously they thought her injury was serious enough, or she was enough of a liability, that they would not let her back in the ring. AEW gave her a second chance, and she was able to make a comeback, and she had that great moment a year ago. And she wrestles a part-time schedule. Fine, at least she's able to still get in the ring, but what has she done? What major stories, you know, storylines has she been involved in that have really been all that compelling? What great matches has she had? None that I can really think of. So it's been a very underwhelming run. It doesn't mean that if Tony Khan renews her that they can't try to turn that around and try to come up with other stuff for her. I don't see her being the change that you know, a lot of people thought she would be when she initially came in. As far as the women's division, the women's division has evolved around her. It hasn't really evolved because of her. She has not been one of the flag bearers of this women's division in this company. She's fine to, you know, have on that roster. And I do think that at some point you have to do a program with her and Mercedes. Right now they're both heels. I don't know that it works. But I would expect that if she sticks around, it would be impossible for me to conceive that they would have both of them on the same roster and at some point they wouldn't do a story and they wouldn't work together. But that's the update on her. And as far as the Tony and Mariah stuff, again, I can't say enough good things about the angle they did when Mariah turned on her. In many ways, that was the peak. And even with that, it's kind of felt since then like, all right, we have quite a bit of time left until Wembley. And so what are we going to do? We've seen some vignettes where they have tried to flesh out the Mariah May character, and those have been good. But it kind of lost a little bit of steam, and I've been waiting, counting down the days for the match at Wembley. I expect it to be a bloody affair. And as far as predictions and everything, I'll be doing my predictions on the podcast on Saturday, but very much looking forward to that match on Sunday. We got one last showdown between Will Ospreay and MJF ahead of their title match at Wembley, and what a showdown it was. Of course, it's going to be for the International Championship, or as MJF now calls it, the American Championship. Massive ovation for Will Ospreay coming out to the ring. And he took the time to really soak in the chants of the crowd. These people loved him. MJF came to the ring in an American flag suit. Ospreay started making some local references, saying he wrestled in a pub nearby once that was dirtier than the wife, which popped the crowd and the announcers. Ospreay said that you can call him Barry Scott because bang and the dirt is gone. I have no fucking idea what that means. Even Excalibur, I think, on the commentary said that he had to go to Google to even check and see what that meant. I gave up on some of the references that he dropped. I had no idea what he was talking about, but obviously he could read the room and, you know, he's from that part of the world. And so the people got the references and they popped for it and he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. So whatever it was that he was referring to, the crowd understood it and they loved it. MJF said that he was still injured, but he came back early because he was begged by top brass in the company and Warner Brothers Discovery to clean up Ospreay's mess. Ospreay was hyped when he heard about AEW, he said, but he and his friends laughed when they saw MJF was the face of the show and the double clothesline with him and Adam Cole made them giggle. All In last year wasn't about the two of them going out and having a classic match. It was about two friends jerking each other off. Ospreay wasn't even employed here last year, he said. Despite Tony Khan having 3,000 people and their nans under contract, he was the one who was begged to go out at Wembley and have a good wrestling match because Tony Khan could not rely on his world champion at the time to do so. Ospreay said that MJ, and by the way, I don't know, I know what he was saying there, but I'm not sure that that's not necessarily an indictment of the company he works for when you consider that he's pointing out that Tony Khan has 3,000 people under contract at the back, but he called on Will Ospreay to come in and save the day. And that's a lie, by the way. It's not 3,000 people. It's 4,000. Ospreay said that MJF is entertainment, but they're meant to cater to the fans and their voices. This isn't just about restoring the international title. It's about restoring the feeling. And Ospreay is the feeling. MJF said he doesn't care about the fans because they're meaningless. He said he believed that four-eyed dork, Tony Khan, when he said that things would be safe in Ospreay's hands. MJF asked Ospreay, who the hell do you think you are? Who the hell are you? He said everyone knows who MJF is and everyone loves him. He said that everybody agrees that he is the best pro wrestler, and he wondered who told Ospreay that he was the best in the world. And he said, wait. Say what? Them? The fans? I thought he was going to say Meltzer. Said them? He mocked the idea of the fans saying it and said the fans know nothing about pro wrestling. He said he knows that's true because the fans like Will Ospreay's matches. He's the longest reigning AEW world champion of all time. He also headlined the biggest show of all time as he is the ace, while Ospreay is second place. MJF said he's from the only place that matters, the only place on earth that matters, the United States of America. And while Ospreay has only one move he can use to beat MJF, the Tiger Driver, he's not man enough to pull the trigger. Says the fans can feel all they want, but facts don't care about feelings. Ospreay said, congratulations, the history books. Says they can be rewritten, but you can't rewrite the feeling the wrestling fans have. He said, if you go around the world and you ask who is the best in the world, they will all say Will Ospreay. So it doesn't matter where you go, what country you go to, Japan, any place in Europe, England, it doesn't matter. The United States, they all say the same thing, that Will Ospreay is the best in the world. It took MJF 4 years to win the fans over. It only took him 4 beats of his entrance music. Ospreay said they don't love MJF. And this right here was the key moment of this segment. Because as soon as Will Ospreay said that the fans don't love MJF, right? They love him. They don't love MJF. MJF exploded at Ospreay. He exploded at him and he said, they did until you came along. Saying the quiet part out loud. We saw the green-eyed monster rear his ugly head here at this exact moment in this segment. That was the key moment, where you saw the jealousy from MJF. And again, he sold it like he didn't mean to do that. He kind of lost himself there for a second. He didn't mean to say that out loud. But I like the way they did that, because he got him all riled up and he said the quiet part out loud, which is that he's jealous of Will Ospreay and the fact that he walked into this company and in record time, the fans fell in love with him. And he became the top babyface in the company when that was the role that MJF used to occupy. And he can't stand it. It's eating him alive inside. It's the number one reason why he resents this man and he hates his guts. So MJF calmed down. He said that Ospreay is a great father and a great wrestler. But earlier tonight, he got to spend some time with Ospreay's wife and so-called kid. He said so-called since Ospreay's wife had him with another man and Ospreay stepped in to be the father. And then MJF leaned in and he said that he's got a feeling the next kid that Ospreay's wife has will not be Ospreay's either. So Will looked like he was about ready to explode. He turned to where the announcers were sitting at ringside and he said, Tony Schiavone. And Schiavone, you can see Schiavone, he stood up at the desk. He goes, yes, Will. And he asked Tony if he had Tony Khan in his ear. He said, what's the fine if I punch MJF in the face right now? Because I guess this was another segment where there was not supposed to be any physicality. So he wants to know, how much am I going to be fined if I punch this guy in the face? And Shivani said it will be 100,000 pounds sterling, which I guess is the equivalent, he said, of $127,000. And Ospreay said, it's worth it. And he leveled MJF. By the way, one punch, it ain't worth $127,000. I'm sorry. It ain't worth it. So that was a little goofy, by the way. See, like, if they would have said, $25,000. Like, I can understand that. $25,000, Tony Khan's probably throwing money at Will Ospreay like it's going out of style. All right, whatever, 25K. $127,000, though. I mean, unless you're punching the guy with, razor blades on your knuckles. Hardly seems worth it. But he punched him. Security jumped in. They got wiped out one by one by Ospreay. He was forearming them and punching them down. Finally, they grabbed him, and that allowed MJF to crack him with the Dynamite Diamond ring right in the head. And it busted Ospreay open. He had blood pouring down his forehead. MJF hit a brain buster, counted his own pin. He got the visual pin. And then he held up the American title before looking to try for the Tiger Driver. He was setting up for the Tiger Driver 91, but security intervened, and that was the end of the segment. This was fantastic. This was great. And you had two guys who, MJF is already a master of the mic. We already know that, and he has a way that he is able to control the crowd. Will Ospreay also is an excellent promo. And I was impressed when he first came into the company because he's not used to weekly television. It's a very different style when he was working for New Japan and doing indie dates, right? He didn't have weekly television where he had to come out and cut promos every week. And I remember him saying one of his concerns was he curses all the time. And so I got to get used to not cursing on live TV. He has adapted very well. And obviously in front of this audience, he knew all the right buttons to push, all the right notes to hit. So you had two masters of their craft in many ways, matching wits in the ring here, going into, arguably the second biggest match on the card on Sunday, and I thought they knocked it out of the park. I thought that this was great, and I loved the part where MJF, you saw that vulnerability come out, which we don't see very often, but he showed it here, and that was key. Because that is why we are here. That's why we are where we are on Sunday with this match. And all this pent-up hatred and resentment that he has for this man, it's all traced back to the fact that they loved me before they loved you. It's like you're the shiny new toy, and I'm the old toy now who's thrown in the toy bin. And he doesn't like that, right? It's simple, it's easy to understand, and it fits his character that he would be jealous of somebody else. So I loved it. I thought this was fantastic. And there was another segment in the back a little bit later on, which I'll get to, that really gives you, I think, a sense of what this finish is going to be, what this finish should be to the match on Sunday, because it all ties together. It actually all ties back to something that happened a few months ago at Dynasty. Renee was backstage. Said that she was told there was an incident in the office that led to Hangman Adam Page being asked to leave the building. And as she was speaking, she was able to grab him because we saw Hangman with his rolling luggage and he was exiting the building. So she stopped him and he revealed that he got what he wanted. He is now in the casino gauntlet match. On Sunday at All In. Of course, the winner of the Casino Gauntlet gets a guaranteed shot at the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. We don't know when. It could be anywhere. Now, refresh my memory here, because this is the third one we've had now. This will be the third Casino Gauntlet in about 4 months. So they clearly have fallen in love with this gimmick. The last one they did on Dynamite, they actually main evented the show with it. And it was fantastic. But you, at the same time, you don't want to overdo the gimmick either. But refresh my memory here. You win the gauntlet. It doesn't work like Money in the Bank, I don't believe, where you can cash in at any time, right? You can call your shot and say, okay, next week or at the pay-per-view or tomorrow, you know, I want my championship match. I don't think the way it works is that, because there were some people asking me, do you think, you know, Hangman's going to win? He's going to come out at the end of the show and insert himself. It'll be a triple threat, you know, Rollins at WrestleMania. I don't think it works that way. But I also don't know that they really have said that it doesn't. I don't know if they've flat out explained what the rules are. I just think you win a championship match that you can, you know, quote unquote, cash in at a later date. So I would not get carried away with all these thoughts and ideas that, you know, he's going to come out and interject himself into the main event on Sunday if he wins, because I don't think that's how it works. But he said that he's in the gauntlet. He's going to run over anybody in that match. Now, at that moment, Evil Uno comes strolling by. He's passing by, and Hangman pulls him aside. His old friend from the Dark Order, the Dork Order, Evil Uno, and he pulls him in, and he asks him if he knows anybody who is in the Casino Gauntlet match. And Uno said, well, as a matter of fact, I just came from Tony Khan, you know, Tony Khan's office. I'm in the Gauntlet match. And he's very excited about this. And as he is excitedly talking to Renee, you see in the background that Hangman has grabbed a chair. And he hits Uno, kind of like with the edge of the chair, like in the shoulder. Or maybe the back of the neck. And knocks him down on the ground. And Hangman says that he's going to run over anybody because he wants to make sure that his joy, his happiness, and his dreams go up in smoke. Obviously referring to Swerve Strickland. Hangman being in the gauntlet makes sense. It's what I said last week. I mean, they were teasing something with him and Jeff Jarrett. I don't need to see him wrestling Jeff fucking Jarrett at Wembley Stadium. You want to put him in the gauntlet? Be my guest. But how are you going to have a gauntlet for a world championship match when the world champion, at the moment, for now, is the man that Hangman came back to kill? His sole purpose in coming back to AEW and existing right now is to take from Swerve what he has, which is the AEW world title. You have a gauntlet match for a shot at that championship. Of course, Hangman has to be in this match. So I'm happy that he has found his way onto the card. He now joins a list of talent that, and this is all we know so far, Hangman obviously is in the match, plus Orange Cassidy, who enters first, which is important, because it's not like a War Games match or a Royal Rumble where everybody has to enter before you can win the match. This could end at any time. Orange Cassidy could come out at number one and start the gauntlet off with, I don't know, I'm just fucking Dale Dunderhead, let's say. Okay, so Dale Dunderhead is in the gauntlet, and Orange Cassidy could hit an orange punch and pin Dunderhead in the first 30 seconds and win the match. That's the significance of him coming out at number one. So he's coming in at one. Kyle O'Reilly is in there, and Mark Briscoe is in there. And that's all we know. There are going to be a bunch of surprises. That's what made the last match so fun. There's going to be surprises. Is Ricochet going to be one of those surprises? Are they going to debut him at Wembley Stadium? We haven't heard his name mentioned at all. There's been nothing said about Ricochet, but he is a free man. And I have no doubt the way that Will Ospreay was basically on his knees begging for this man to come sign with AEW, I would be shocked beyond belief if he was to end up anywhere else. So I'm looking forward to seeing who pops up in the gauntlet. But at the end of the day, the one who makes the most sense to walk away with the win is Hangman. So that's who I'm pulling for on Sunday. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. When your schedule is packed and you've got work to do, kids to drive to soccer practice, or something that needs fixing for your parents or your in-laws, it can be hard to make time for the things that you really care about. You know, for me, it's that cardio workout at the gym. Sometimes the day gets away from me. I don't get it in. I'm all pissed off because for me, that's non-negotiable. I have to get that in. But sometimes there just aren't enough hours in the day. Even the things that make us happy, it can be tough to make time for them. When you feel like you have no time for yourself, non-negotiables like that, or like therapy, well, they become more important than ever. Therapy can do incredible things for you. It can help you understand yourself better, better understand the things that may be bothering you, identifying ways to try to fix them. It's okay to ask for help. I know some people, you know, for some of them, that's still a taboo thing. The idea of therapy or asking someone for help, you think you can just figure it out on your own. You're fooling yourself. It's okay to admit that you don't always have all the answers. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be suited to your schedule. Just fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and rest easy knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Never skip a therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. And then we have the Continental Championship on the line. Kazuchika Okada defending the title against Claudio Castagnoli. This was Continental rules, so no interference from the Elite, no funny business in these Continental matches, which I appreciate. This was the expected great match between these two. Right, you knew that going in. It went through two commercial breaks. Both men traded suplex. This was after one of the breaks. Both men traded suplex attempts. Ended with a deadlift vertical suplex by Claudio. This man is very strong, in case you didn't know. Okada fought out of a giant swing, leaving the ring instead. This resulted in a full-speed running uppercut from Claudio. Okada responded with a DDT and a neckbreaker, but took too long to follow up, and Claudio clotheslined him outside, and in the process, he tumbled out to the floor with him. As Claudio went up top, Okada hit his signature dropkick, which sent Claudio tumbling down to the floor. Okada quickly brought it back inside. He wanted his top rope elbow drop. Claudio, though, cut him off with uppercuts. He wanted a superplex. Okada, though, hit a headbutt and a John Woo drop kick before finally hitting the elbow. We got the Rainmaker pose into the bird flip from Okada. Big smile, big cheesy grin on his face when he did it too. And he stepped over Claudio, literally walked right over him, just looking dead at the hard cam and at all the fans in the crowd, still flipping him off. He took too long, and he gave Claudio an opening here to come back into this. Did a giant swing. 20 revolutions in total on the giant swing. Claudio let go and then hit the ropes, but Okada cut him off with a picture-perfect drop kick to the mush. Okada tried for a rainmaker. Claudio ducked, hit a springboard uppercut, wanted the neutralizer, only for Okada to counter into the air raid crash across the knee. At this point, Justin Roberts, now I'm getting into this, right? I'm getting into this match right now. It's getting good. I have no concept of where we are time-wise, because I wasn't even thinking of the time limit. I didn't realize that we had a 20-minute time limit in this match, which is ridiculous for a championship match. Unless it's the fucking TV title, we could do a little bit better, I think, than 20 minutes. So I wasn't thinking about the time limit, and then Justin Roberts interjects in the middle of all this. And he says, 1 minute remaining. And you could hear the crowd groaned in unison, right? They booed. But they also realized that how this was probably going to end. It kind of gave away the finish. But all of a sudden, there was this sense of urgency as they started throwing uppercuts at each other. Claudio ducked a rainmaker and hit a massive pop-up uppercut. Okada, though, clutched onto the ropes to stall for time. He was holding on for dear life. He couldn't pull him off. And so Claudio just did a standing double stomp. And he was able to break the grip that way. Okada tried to again escape the ring. Claudio stopped him, but enough time had gone by. The bell rang. Time expired. The crowd wanted 5 more minutes. Here come the Young Bucks now and Jack Perry on stage as they're walking down to the ring saying that this match was phenomenal. And they're asking the fans in the crowd, do you guys want 5 more minutes? And of course, the people in Cardiff said, yes, they want 5 more minutes. He said, well, unfortunately, that's not going to happen. Because the contract said Okada had to wrestle 20 minutes, not 25. And as EVPs, they're sticklers for the rules. So they told Claudio, better luck next time. They told him to get out of the ring. He wouldn't get out. They said, if you don't, we're going to have to physically remove you. And at that moment, here comes Darby Allin. Here comes FTR down to the ring. making their way out for their match, their scheduled match, with the Young Bucks and Jack Perry, which was coming up next. As great as this match was, and it really was, this is a four-star match right here, it still felt like they were holding back. It still felt like we didn't get the full Monty here from these two. The time limit draw was very underwhelming, but it leaves the door open for a rematch, and they have not yet announced that rematch for Wembley. There's still time, potentially, for them to do so, so we can't assume that that might not happen. But unless he ends up in the gauntlet match or something, then it looks like Okada will be off the Wembley card this year. This will not be the last time we see these two get in the ring and dance. My guess would be in Chicago in 2 weeks at All Out. And we get the rematch there. Continental title on the line, Claudio challenging Okada one more time, and that's when Okada picks up the win. That would be my guess. Now again, we had a trios match next. It was Darby Allin and FTR teaming up to take on Jack Perry. Always think of Jean Ferry. Jean Ferry. That was Andre's first ring name when he got into the wrestling business. Jean Ferry. This is Jack Perry. Jack Perry does not look anything like Jean Ferry. Jean Ferry took shits bigger than Jack Perry. But he is the TNT champion. This was an all-out brawl here at the start. Claudio brawled to the back with Okada during the start of all this. Darby flew through the ropes for a dive onto Perry as FTR was sent outside, and then they got hit with double dives by the Bucks. As they were celebrating, their celebration was short-lived because they didn't see Darby Allin flying off the top to the floor with a coffin drop. Late in the match, the EVP trigger was ducked by Cash Wheeler and the Bucks collided knees. The match broke down. FTR and Darby, they got triple sharpshooters applied. Or scorpion deathlocks, as it were. You know, Darby paying homage to his dad. By the way, I saw a picture of Sting, as JBL would say, and it was a picture of Sting. He was at, I think, a Cauliflower Alley Club event this past weekend, and he has allowed his natural hair color to flow. He's the silver-haired fox now. Sting is in his silver-haired fox phase, like Kevin Nash was back in the TNA days. Remember the silver fox? He had the long, flowing silver mane. But he looked like he had a big smile on his face. He looked healthy and happy, and I'm happy for Sting. Sting had the best send-off that you could possibly ask for. He had, if not one of, certainly one of, if not the greatest send-off and retirement match that a wrestler has had. The way that Tony Khan, I mean, he did everything to roll out the red carpet treatment for Sting on his way out. So it was well-deserved. But Jack Perry, he caught Darby with a scorpion death drop and then went for his charging knee, but Darby ducked and Perry ran into a shatter machine. Nick Jackson got hit with a powerplex and Darby finished him off with a coffin drop to win it for the babyfaces. Yes, Tomas, I did see the video that Jack Perry, and I talked about this the other night. If you have not seen it, there's a video that Jack Perry posted on his social media. I know. It was on his Twitter, I assume Instagram as well, making the new TNT title. What he did was he took the old TNT title, he took the main plate off, and he just went. Now, I don't know how wise it was for him to be doing this shirtless, because he's dealing with, it wasn't lava, but it was like, I don't know what kind of materials and metals he was dealing with here, but it was actually very, very involved. And I joked, I said, you know, Anna Jay is actually over in Japan for the first time right now doing some a tour, I think, with Stardom. So he's probably at home and he's fucking bored. So he decided to mangle the TNT title, and whatever he did, he gave it a little splash of, like a little splatter at the end of red paint. I tell you what, though, man, that title, it looks badass. It really does. So I think if they start selling those titles, those will sell well. It's actually a pretty badass-looking title. So, yes, I did see the video. Molten, there it is. Molten metal. What did I say, lava? Yes, he used molten lava to create his new TNT championship. Maybe not the wisest thing, though, to be dealing with molten metal shirtless. Because he had, like, the goggles on. But one little splash of that stuff, and I don't think it's going to feel too good on the flesh. So the Elite left through the crowd, right? The heels are the losers here. They are leaving through the crowd when the Acclaimed comes out on stage with Billy Gunn. Max Caster said that it's nice the royal family showed up today as the court jesters, FTR, and his two favorite princesses, the Young Bucks, were there. The Acclaimed, he said, are the kings, and Caster said that he is the best wrestler alive. How he said that with a straight face, I will never know. He was not even the best wrestler in this quarter hour. The Bucks could not beat the Acclaimed last week, and it all in, the belts come home to the kings. Anthony Bowen said that they have nothing left to prove, as FTR and the Bucks, they can't beat them. They cannot beat the Acclaimed. And they will fight until they are the next AEW Tag Team Champions, because everyone loves the Acclaimed. Everyone might love the Acclaimed, but they don't love them as much as they did a year ago. You could tell. It's cooled off. They've cooled off from their peak. And in fact, that's a great way for me, frankly, to describe this entire build to this match at All In. I honestly don't care about this match. I really don't. And I know that these three teams are going to go out there and they're going to have, I'm sure, a very good match. Maybe it'll even exceed the expectations that I have for it. I mean, we know what the Bucks and FTR can do, but I've grown tired of it. Throwing the Acclaimed in there does not make me any more excited for this match. And it's a real shame. Because, you know, tag team wrestling was such a big priority and such a big deal in AEW. And really their calling card when this company first started. And I do think that the addition of the trios titles and all these trios and trios matches have taken away. And it's not the only reason why, but it's taken away from the appeal of just good old-fashioned tag team wrestling in this company. And it's not for a lack of teams. I mean, there's plenty of teams if you look at the roster. But none that have been built up and really focused on enough to get them to a point where they could be in this position. Instead of going back to the same old shit, you know, it would be nice if they took two or three other teams and really built them up for a spot like this. So this is the match I honestly may be looking forward the least to, this match on the entire show, or at least the main card, which is too bad. I tell you what I'm looking more forward to. I'm looking more forward to the coffin match. Because you know Darby is just going to fucking kill himself. But these are two of the, you know, the so-called pillars of this company. And they were two fourths of that Fatal 4-Way match last year at Double or Nothing, when it was these two. It was Sammy Guevara. It was MJF. And they went out there and they had an outstanding match. One of the greatest Fatal 4-Way matches you'll ever see. So, you know, we're getting these two. They're very familiar with each other. They've worked together before. They have been building this feud up now for a few months, going back to at least Double or Nothing when Perry got set on fire by Darby and his flamethrower. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to that a hell of a lot more than I am this tag team title match. Renee was backstage. Don't tell Dax. Renee was backstage checking on Will Ospreay, who was being checked out by the doctor. This is the segment I referred to earlier that I said was also really good. He's sitting backstage and the doctor is checking him out. And he still had dried blood from earlier on his forehead. And Bryan Danielson storms up to Ospreay and tells him, "Do it. Do it." Then he walks away. And you can see, like, Ospreay is processing what Bryan is saying. What Bryan is saying, and again, this is a very simple yet very effective segment. It was Bryan Danielson giving Will Ospreay his blessing to go ahead and use the Tiger Driver 91 on Sunday at All In. That's the match that nearly crippled Bryan in the match that they had at Dynasty back in April. So that one spot in that match, and they have turned it into an entire story that I think is going to pay off in the finish of this international title match on Sunday. Because How does Will Ospreay not win with that Tiger Driver 91? He has to. So, but I love that it took Brian going up to him and saying, okay, do it. Like getting his approval as the guy that he almost killed. It took that to seemingly, you know, get Ospreay, but we'll find out on Sunday, but seemingly get him to finally go ahead and not be too afraid to go ahead and use that move. So very simple segment, but I liked it. And then we had the final showdown, the final segment on this show. Final showdown before Wembley between the AEW World Champion Swerve Strickland and his challenger on Sunday, the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. Nigel McGuinness was the master of ceremonies here, hosting this segment. First, he welcomed the franchise player and the most dangerous man in AEW, the AEW World Champion, Swerve Strickland. He got into the ring with Prince Nana, and McGuinness was about to reluctantly introduce the challenger when he stopped himself and said, he wanted to go shake Swerve's hand first, and he was going to interview Swerve. And he brought up, Nigel did, brought up his various nicknames for Bryan Danielson. He referred to Brittle Bryan. He referred to the Neckbreak Kid. I mean, he's been healing on Danielson for over a year now. That's why I thought we were going to get the match at Wembley between those two, and then they didn't do it. So this was no surprise. I mean, every time he heals on Bryan and gives him a new nickname on commentary, it's just the best. Nigel is great. Meanwhile, he said Strickland is in the best shape of his life. And Nigel asked, how does it feel to be an overwhelming favorite going into this match? Swerve said that he's the most dangerous man due to the pain that he endures and inflicts to be the AEW World Champion. He then ran down his list of victims, all the men that he has beaten so far here this year, and including Hangman, twice, that goes back to last year, Jay White, Takeshita, Samoa Joe, Claudio, Christian Cage, and Will Ospreay. And yet you will have people who will say that Swerve was buried in this run. He was buried, and now he's going to lose to Bryan. He was buried. Thankfully, there are fewer and fewer people I hear saying that, but they were there. They were there. But then you look at the list of names of this, you know, that this man has beaten over the past, not year, but over the past 9 months, like he said, Hangman Page twice, three times if you count the triple threat at Revolution, won the world championship from Samoa Joe, beat Will Ospreay, one of the biggest fucking stars in the entire company, who up to that point was undefeated, won Blood and Guts, his team did, at Blood and Guts, and now is going to be headlining Wembley Stadium against Bryan Danielson. I think Swerve has done quite well for himself. So he said that he still feels, he's going to dissect this man from head to toe, but as much as he appreciates Danielson as a generational talent, a Pacific Northwesterner like himself, he still feels disrespected by Bryan, who he hears saying that he's ready to retire, and he's ready to go off into the sunset. Strickland said that Danielson is not taking this moment from him. He is taking it from Danielson. And Swerve said that he will make sure Bryan never gets back in the ring again, because that is the stipulation on Sunday. If Bryan Danielson loses this match, he has to retire. Not full-time, you know, he can still do part. Like, no, he's done. He's finished. It is title versus career on Sunday. That is the stipulation. That is his vow. That is his promise. So he said, if Danielson does get the itch again, just know that Swerve will be there. Even if it's at an indie show in the Northwest or an Arena Mexico show and he has to show up under a mask, he will be there. El Swervo, he will be there. Even if Danielson is at home with his wife talking about maybe having an itch to get back in the ring, guess where Swerve will be? So this was going on a little long. I actually thought that they could have cut a few minutes out of this. It was going long. And Danielson obviously felt the same. They hit his music. He came sprinting down to the ring and he wiped out Swerve with a Busaiku knee. Prince Nana bailed. Nigel McGuinness left the ring. Danielson said, maybe a lot of people are confused as he doesn't come out here 20 minutes every week to talk about himself. He knows who he is. This is the truth. Strickland knows it, and he knows it. Bryan Danielson is the best goddamn wrestler in the world. And they censored it, but that's what he said. And he says he has been for the last 20 years. Strickland can say that he's going to cripple him in front of his daughter, but at Wembley Stadium, the fans that have paid to see him the last 25 years and in front of his family, his wife, his daughter, and his son, Swerve will have to do more than cripple him. He will have to damn near kill him. Because Danielson is going to leave his soul in the ring. He said, tonight, there's been a lot of talking and fighting, but there's only one question left. Can the American effing dragon beat Swerve Strickland for the AEW World Championship? And the yes chants rang out throughout the arena here in Cardiff. And on commentary, Excalibur said that the dragon has awoken and he is ready for all in. Great fire from Bryan Danielson, just what this segment needed. Swerve clearly being positioned and positioning himself as the heel going into this main event, because he's coming out here every week and he is threatening to cripple and retire one of the most beloved wrestlers of our generation. I think that makes you a heel going into this match. So that's his role. What they're doing with Danielson is they're trying to tell the underdog story. As big of a name as he has been for the past decade plus, he is the underdog going into this match. Swerve is on a roll. All the names I mentioned that he beat, Ospreay and everybody else, Danielson, all we've been hearing about is the neck, his body. He's doing interviews talking about how he knows he's going to have to get neck surgery before the end of the year, whether that's legit or kayfabe, who knows. Wouldn't surprise me if it was legit, but he's really been playing it up. You know, Nigel calls him Brittle Bryan on commentary. He's had a lot of injuries. He's missed ring time for concussions and broken arm and, you know, other bumps and bruises and injuries he's had to deal with. So he is the underdog going into this match. Tony Khan is building for that big, memorable moment at the end of the show on Sunday. It is clear as day that that is what he is going for here. I thought that this segment was very effective. I thought that this segment was the best of the ones they've done so far involving these two. This and the MJF Will Ospreay segment were the highlights of the night, plus the Continental title match with Okada and Claudio. And that's enough for me to make this a thumbs up show. And even the other segments on the show also, nothing was bad, but those really were the highlights. So I thought a very enjoyable, very effective go-home show with a hot crowd in Cardiff. I'd love for them to take Dynamite on the road outside the country to more international venues every now and then. I mean, they may not be able to do it all the time, but I think they need to get out more and go to some of these other places where the product, it just comes across as more hot than it does in most places that they run here in this country. You know, and WWE, they're hot all over right now, but same thing with them. Yeah, they're going to be international next weekend. They're going to be going to Berlin. And you got Randy Orton doing an interview the other day saying that I'm bringing my wife with me on this trip because I want her to be in the building for this. This is going to be fucking off the chain. This crowd is going to be ridiculous, right? And it's their first show, their first PLE in Germany. So for their first Dynamite here outside North America, I thought that it was an excellent show overall. I am looking forward to All In on Sunday. For those who don't know, it is a 1 o'clock Eastern start. It is going to be a very long day and probably a very long show, but I am looking forward to it. Here is the Twitter poll, by the way. What did you think of Dynamite before All In? 61%. Thumbs up. I would go higher than that myself. 17.8% thumbs in the middle and 21% thumbs down. What the folks thought of Dynamite here before All In. The Go Home. Of course, it's not the Go Home AEW show because there's still Rampage and then Collision on Saturday. But as far as Dynamite is concerned, it was the Go Home show. It will certainly be the final AEW show that I watch before All In. I can tell you that. All right, let's take a look at your super chats here. We are currently at 323 likes. Just a little update for you there. All right, who we got here? Let's make sure we cover all of your messages and start with Todd Warner. Todd's going to get us started tonight. What's going on, Todd? Thank you for the support. Thank you for the love. If you had the opportunity to interview John Cena, would you ask him about the JTG sunglasses incident? Seems so out of character for him listening to other interviews. Would I ask him about it? I would not. It would just be awkward and uncomfortable, and I just don't see the point in doing that. You know, to do what? What does that accomplish? Mark Jackson, after breaking the Ricky Starks news, should we start calling Solo Meltzer sound? Well, look, I mentioned this on TNT last night, that I was told, and I haven't seen anything confirmed about it, nor denied, but from what I heard, Ricky Starks is a free agent. Contract expired in July. He is a free agent, and the belief from most people is that he will end up in WWE, likely in NXT. Nothing is official on that front, but that is the belief. Because a lot of people have been asking about Ricky Starks and his status, and how long does he have left on his deal? Is he stuck there for another 6 months or a year? Because there are other people there who have longer contracts, who may or may not be happy right now, who are stuck. So what is his status? That is what I heard. That is what I was told. But we shall see. Either way, I think that we're going to see Ricky in NXT in these next few months. That's my belief. But yes, thank you for the super chat, Mark. I appreciate it. And that is your name. That is not a descriptive term. Oz and Glorious with the 12. Let's get this out of the way early. Hit that like button for B2B. Also, really enjoyed Dynamite tonight. Yes. It was an excellent show. What is the JTG sunglasses incident? I have mentioned that story numerous times on the Sound Off over the years. So you're disappointing me because you're telling me, you're showing me that you don't listen to the show, and that really breaks my heart. Well, I'll give you the short version of the story. Many years ago, JTG was about to get his first piece of merch. And this is according to JTG in his first book. And I don't get the impression that JTG would just make this story up out of thin air. But as he told the story, he was about to get his first piece of merch, which was going to be some shades. He was a huge Bret Hart mark. And he always loved Bret Hart, right? Because he's got good taste. And how Bret had the glasses, and Bret would give the glasses to the kid in the crowd. Like, he loved that because he grew up watching Bret. You know, he watched a lot of the same stuff that I watched when I came up as a wrestling fan. So he was very excited that he was about to get his first piece of merch. He had done an interview unrelated to this with the WWE magazine. And I don't know, he was talking about, I think, Shad. I think he was talking about his tag team partner. And he used the words loyalty and respect in describing his partner. Now, obviously, John Cena's signature was hustle, loyalty, and respect. And I guess in wrestling circles, and the unwritten rules of the locker room, right, you can't use the same terms that other people use in their slogan or catchphrase or whatever. Anyway, he immediately realized what he had done, which, I mean, what did he do, right? It just seems so stupid. But he realized, okay, this might be a problem. And he asked the editor or the writer, whoever it was, please leave that out. Like, please don't publish that part of what I said. And the guy told him, yeah, no problem. So, of course, what does the guy do? He publishes the fucking quote. Anyway, some time goes by. JTG's in the bathroom at the arena one day. He's in the stall. And I think he's in the stall. Anyway, he gets out, and John Cena is there. John Cena is now in the bathroom with JTG. And again, I'm just going off my recollection of the story off the top of my head as far as the exact verbiage that was used, but clearly Cena had seen the quote in the magazine. And JTG tried to explain to him, like, look, I didn't mean any offense. I told the guy don't publish it. He did anyway. And Cena was like, no problem. You know, don't worry about it. But, you know, those shades that you were supposed to be having, you know, out in the merch shop soon. Yeah, those are going to have to be on the back burner. Basically like, okay, now we're even. And JTG never got his shades. He never got his shades. So that's the story. And it just seems so petty. But that's how people are, you know? And that's how... And some of these guys, especially like top talents, you hear stories and just very... They seem very insecure. Which is odd because, you know, when you're at the top of your game and you're the number one guy or you're one of the top stars in the company, like, I understand wanting to protect your spot, but when it comes to stuff like that, it's just so petty and just so ridiculous. And that could have been a big deal for someone like JTG. I mean, for Cena, he's got, at the time, he had like a new fucking shirt every week. He had all kinds of merch. He had wristbands and t-shirts and hats. And JTG didn't have anything. And so he was excited to finally get a piece of merch and then squashed. So. Yeah, maybe it was the urinal. I don't know. I thought he had come out of the stall and Cena was there. Maybe Cena sidled up to him at the urinal, whatever it was. He went out of his way to find him in the bathroom and basically just buried this poor guy's hopes and dreams. And he never did get his shades. It is a weird story though, because you do hear about a lot of positive John Cena stories. That one, you know, it's certainly not the most evil thing that a wrestler has done to another wrestler, but it's out of character and it's just very petty. So, and yes, if I ever interviewed him, I'm not going to bring it up. So, I don't see the point in doing so. The Winston slip. Please rank WrestleManias 1 through 40 from the best to worst. I'm not going to do that. But thank you for the question. Nice try. We ain't got time for that. I will tell you, though, that WrestleMania 17, probably still number one, I think top to bottom as far as WrestleManias go. There have been some really good ones, though, in recent years. 40. 40 was really good. 39. 30 and 31 stand out to me. 17 might still be tops, though. I think I still might have that in number one. And for the record, WrestleMania 9, not the worst WrestleMania. The worst WrestleMania was WrestleMania 11. That was the worst WrestleMania. 11 is up there among the worst. 27 is up there among the worst. 32 is up there among the worst. 2 is one of the worst. 9 is better than all the ones I just mentioned. I don't give a shit what anybody says. Frode, 79. What is this? Rank my Randy Savage match. Frode, thank you. Thank you for the $2. You want some great Randy Savage messages? You want some great Randy Savage matches, Frode? WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 7, WrestleMania 8. Go check those out. Those are some pretty badass matches. You want a great Randy Savage tag team match? SummerSlam 89. Savage and Zeus against Hogan and Beefcake. Great stuff. Great stuff. Darth Raven. Hangman wins the casino gauntlet, then cashes in on the champion that night. Yeah, again, I don't think it works that way. I don't think that it works. Oh, you know what? WrestleMania 36. I did forget about that. I blocked that out. I blocked all that pandemic stuff out of my head. Yeah, WrestleMania 30. You know what? The WrestleMania 36, it's such a weird one. I mean, you could say that's the worst of all time, but I almost... You put like a little star next to it. Like, it's just so unique. It's hard to even rank against the other WrestleManias. Which is too bad because even in an empty warehouse, we had that great match with Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley on that show. I think they opened night two, I believe. And we had the Boneyard match. So there was some great stuff on that WrestleMania, even though there were no fans. And then we had that Edge and Randy Orton match, which some might say is still going on to this very day. I think that's the match that got me blocked from by Copeland. I just did not like that match. But he has since unblocked. But I think it was after that that I saw that he had blocked. Did not like that match. Jerome Eugenio, what is your go-to snacks when watching a pay-per-view? I'm a pretzels guy. Salted pretzels. I love pretzels. If I'm at a party and there's potato chips or whatever, yeah, of course I'll have chips, but I don't buy potato chips or Doritos or, nachos or any of that garbage, any of that greasy shit. Pretzels. That's my go-to. Pretzels or an apple. I'm like Carlito. Jacob Donnelly. Very much enjoyed your segment on the Sound Off about WWE Niagara Falls. I never even knew that that was a thing. See, you learn something new every time. Every time you listen to the Sound Off. Now, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was actually a question from another listener. Shout out to Graham. And, I think a lot of people probably have no idea. They know about WWF New York because it was talked about more. But the Niagara Falls thing actually lasted a lot longer than the restaurant in New York did. But the big difference between the two is that the Niagara Falls thing was just a licensing play. It's not like they owned, real estate there. They just slapped their name on it. It was a store, basically. It was a store, and then there was a theme park ride called the Pile Driver, and that's really all it was. But I think it was open for probably a decade or close to a decade before they closed it. I don't know what it is now. They probably just took the branding off and just slapped another logo on there. Dev to Dust, Excalibur is one of the worst commentators ever. Not a fan of Excalibur, are you? Not a fan of old Sockface. Justin G. Can't what? I just saw face lick. I assume that's in reference to my Katrina comment. Justin, thank you. And thank you for the, I think it was you. Earlier with the gifted membership. Oz and Glorious, minority take here, but I'm hoping Saraya stays and gets a Copeland-style run. Never saw her in the Fed, but I dig everything she does, rare as it is. That's one of the few nice comments I've seen, honestly, about her run in AEW. Most of the comments I see just shit all over it. I try to be fair, and I just think it's been underwhelming. But it doesn't mean that if she was featured more, doesn't have, fresh faces that she could be working with. Like I said, Mercedes is one. BCOM, see clearly, my conspiracy is that AEW Ring of Honor gets an hour on TV and Athena will head the show. I don't think that that's conspiracy. I think that that's actually very possible. Justin. Math doesn't add up with Samoa Joe's 8 1/3% chance. Jeremy Rose. Swerve must win. Then talks nonstop shit about retiring Bryan Danielson week after week. Finally, BD comes back. One time only and wins the title, retires on top, and AEW as a tournament for the title. No. I hate that idea. They just did that with Sting. You're going to do that twice in 1 year? You're going to retire somebody as the champion twice in 1 year and then have a tournament? I don't like it. Jeremy, I love you, but I don't like it. Not that I wouldn't want to see Swerve win, but I'm kind of resigned to the fact that I could see where Tony is going with this, and I think there's a great way to have your cake and eat it too, where Brian can win the belt and Swerve could get it back from him in Tacoma at WrestleDream. and then they segue into Swerve and Hangman at Full Gear. That's what I've been saying, and I think that that probably would work best. Alex, Brother Solo, good to see you and hear from everybody else in the chat. With WWE and AEW going head-to-head on October 8th with Dynamite and NXT's Big Show taking place, is there a chance that you review both shows on the same day? I did that last year. I hated doing that, but probably yes. I'll probably be doing that again. And I think that's the show in St. Louis, right? The one in Chicago with Punk is the week before. And I think October 8th is in St. Louis with Randy Orton. And who knows who else may be showing up. You know, you got all these Ricky Starks rumors. You got Motor City Machine Guns rumors. You got Lucha Bros rumors about all their statuses. You've got Julia coming in. You've got Stephanie Vaquer whenever her visa situation is worked out. Whoever, who knows when that might be. So there's a lot of potential surprises that WWE could divvy up for those first two CW shows. Black Gappy, Jack Perry is a pro blacksmith. Did you see the safety Crocs? I did. I'm telling you, it was very impressive. Black Gappy says, I look forward to listening to your podcast during work. Streams are cozy as well, and the chat super chill. I love your level-headed approach to wrestling and keep up the great work. The chat is cute. Hey, I don't know if that's the word I would use to describe this chat, but all you guys have been called cute by Black Gappy. But thank you, man. I'm glad you enjoy the shows. Happy to have you in our cute chat. Jazz Jackrabbit, does Ricochet answer Okada's challenge at All In? What challenge? Is Okada having a challenge? Did I miss something here? Is that official that he is having an open challenge for his title? Well, if Okada was to have an open challenge for the Continental title, I would say, yeah, Ricochet could very well be the one to answer it. But I don't know if that's just something that you're pitching to me or if that's something that is actually happening. Yeah, I think you guys just got hit on by Black Gappy. He's looking for some gangbang action tonight, apparently, from all 720 of you. Man, you are going to, he's going to be Stretch Armstrong tonight. Oz and Glorious, Solomonster, these pretzels are making me thirsty. I'm going to be back with you live on Friday night for the SmackDown stream. We have the Bloodline defending their tag team titles against the Street Profits. And we have LA Knight defending his United States Championship for the first time against Santos Escobar, or that's how he says it, right? Santos Escobar. That'll be on Friday. So that will be the next time I am with you live. Again, the weekend is going to be a little wonky because we have All In on Sunday, which kind of throws a monkey wrench into my schedule. So the podcast will go up at some point on Saturday, hopefully earlier in the day, because I had plans, which may go up in smoke now if I can't get the show done early enough, but that's my goal. And we're going to have All-In predictions, Bash in Berlin, early predictions, even though the card is not yet complete. Triple H has to add at least one more match. But the pay-per-view is next Saturday. So I realize I said, shit, I got to do predictions for both these things on 876. So All-In predictions, Bash in Berlin predictions, and hopefully I will have time to talk about my top 25 SmackDown matches and moments for the anniversary coming up on Monday, 25-year anniversary of the debut of SmackDown as a regular weekly series on TV. So we'll talk a little bit about that and take your questions as well. So you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, if you have questions to send in for the mailbag for possible inclusion, if I can get to them. Go ahead and email me. Chris Manson, thank you for being a channel member for 30 9 months. Mina and Mariah at All Out or Grand Slam? If anything, probably All Out. I don't know how long she's here for before she goes back to Japan. Since All Out is 2 weeks later, maybe she'll stick around long enough. You could do that match at All Out. I think, that would be a good match for that show. The Juliet, Mandy Rose, to appear at Black Label Pro Crowning Glory Wrestling Combine presented by DraftKings. That's a mouthful. That's what that is. Hey, Daddy Ugarte, have a good night, man. I'll see you on Friday. You got that. You got it. Power Spying Games. What's my beef with the Headbangers? I have no beef with the Headbangers. I have beef with the Headbangers? I thought I was very professional in the interview, even though they weren't. And Retro KOH. Axe or Smash? Who was the Shawn Michaels? Who had the greater single star potential? See, I don't look at it that way, honestly, because they're kind of even in many ways. But, you know, Barry Darso went on to have numerous gimmicks. Bill Eadie retired. I know Bill Eadie was the mass superstar before that. But, I mean, Darso, you know, we had the Repo Man, and we had Mr. Hole-in-One. He was Crusher Khrushchev. So I got to go Smash. Smash, I think, had the more accomplished busier singles career than Axe did. So if I had to choose one, I would go with Smash. And Oz and Glorious, new to Low Key. Why isn't he on TV? The dude is amazing. Yeah, Low Key is one of the OGs, man, from the early days of Ring of Honor and especially the New York, like East, not just New York, but like East Coast, Philadelphia, New York, independent wrestling scene, and can still go to this very day. You know, we used to have him for a whole bunch of House of Glory shows. He kind of became an institution in HOG in many ways. So I got to, you know, hang around him a little bit, and he's great. You know, low key can still go, man. Dude's a beast. All right, it is time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. Be the booker time here. Let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can conjure up here on a Wednesday night. Here's a nice odd couple pairing. Stone Cold Steve Austin and Dude Love. Former tag team champions. Austin and Dude Love. Going to be taking on the Mega Maniacs of Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. It's the only way we'll ever get Austin and Hogan in the ring together. There you go. You want Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan to share a ring? There you go. A good old marquee match here to open the show. Hulk Hogan is going to be curtain jerking on this show. Now we go to the women's match. Let's go to the ladies. Hey, Justin G, thank you for the $2. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Oh, it's Maki Ito. I heard Maki Ito broke her arm. Is that true? I believe she broke her arm. She's currently healing from a broken arm. I think I saw that mentioned somewhere. So, Maki Ito, get well soon. Haven't heard her name mentioned in a while. All right, Maki Ito against Dark Alexa. It is Dark Alexa Bliss. Dark Alexa and Maki Ito. That would be an interesting match. I knew Bliss fan would be happy about that. I knew. I was waiting. I was looking. I was like, where's Bliss fan? There he is. Not a channel member anymore. Very, very disappointed in you. Very disappointed in you. All right. Men's be the booker. Oh, she broke her wrist? Yeah, Maki Ito broke her wrist. So did Riho. What is with it? What is with all the tiny women breaking their wrists? All right, men's main event. He is him. It is Carmelo Hayes, who is in the middle of a very good series of matches with Andrade on SmackDown. I assume we're going to get a couple more between them. All right, Carmelo Hayes headlining his first ever Be the Booker. With who? Carmelo Hayes against Rowdy Roddy Piper. Well, we know who's going to win the promo battles here. It will not be Carmelo Hayes, but I think Carmelo Hayes and Roddy Piper in the ring, one-on-one, what a unique match that would be. I think that'd be a very good match, actually. Piper, like, in his physical prime against modern-day Carmelo Hayes. Piper, honestly, would be the perfect person for him to work with, too. I think he would learn a lot from Piper, especially on promos. Like, I feel like Piper could help him out a lot in that regard. Not that his promos are terrible, but, you know, he ain't no Roddy Piper, so. It's an interesting kind of clash of generations there. Two in a row, yeah. I don't want to jinx it, but we had a Sonic sweep on Monday. We had a Sonic sweep tonight. Get the brooms out, that's right. We're going to try for a Sonic sweep if we get enough likes on Friday night as well. So bring those likes and bring those super chats. Gold Matthew, just saw Stone Cold Steve Austin against Dude Love, and the fans were chanting Vince is dead. Do you think the fans will chant anything when that day finally comes? The fans were not chanting Vince is dead. That's what Jim Ross said. That's not what they were chanting. They were chanting Vince is gay. And Jim Ross tried to cover up for it by saying, oh, they're chanting Vince is dead. That's not what they were chanting. They chanted a lot worse than that back then, too. But, yeah, I remember that match well. That was the Over the Edge match in 98. It's one of my favorite matches. Such a fun match. I think when the day comes that Vince passes, I think everybody is going to kiss his ass, and I think the fans will bow to him because that's what they do. I think they're going to react to him exactly the way that you would expect they would react to him. I will not be bowing. Did I hear that Sting might be at All In on Sunday? I did not hear that. I think Sting should be there. Sting should make an appearance. Just because he's retired from the ring doesn't mean that he's retired from making appearances. So I hope he goes there. I hope he makes an appearance. I think that would be great. Empower Spying Games. The Juliet told me what the Headbangers did. Yuck. Yeah, well. You know, I tried to no-sell it and just moved on. It is what it is. Interviewed a lot of really cool people that day, though. Other than the Headbangers, of course. Actually, you know, we mentioned Demolition before. I got to interview Demolition. I interviewed the Mountie with Jimmy Hart, ODB, Christy Hemme, Gail Kim, Billy Gunn. Gene Okerlund, though, sitting down with him, doing an actual sit-down interview with me and Gene for a good 10 minutes. That was the highlight of the day for me. That was at the WrestleCon convention, for those who have no idea what I'm talking about. I was the WrestleCon correspondent. They gave me a mic and a cameraman and said, hit the floor, find who you can, and talk to people. And that's what I did. But I got to sit down with Mean Gene out in the lobby for about 10 minutes, and it was very, very cool. One of the highlights of me, you know, any of the interviews I've ever done or any of the cool things I've been able to do since I started doing this podcast, that's right up there. That ranks up there among the very coolest of all the things I've done. But all those interviews, they are up on the YouTube channel. So I think that was in 2017. So if you go back and search for them, because I had access, I got the rights to all the videos, so they just gave them to me and I put them up on my channel. So they're there in the archives here on YouTube if you want to check them out. Superman Bassfisher. Sting showing up on Sunday would be cool. Yeah, he'd get a great reaction, man. He'd get a great response from the people there. I'm sure the people in London would love to see him. Gail Kim is super nice. She was very nice. Christy Hemme was very nice, too. Very nice. Who else? I think there was maybe one other person who I interviewed. It was Bill Apter. Yeah, it was Bill Apter. I bumped into Bill. I did an event with Bill before that, so he and I had already met. We did like a joint event. One of his books came out, and it was like a sound-off meetup / Bill Apter signing that we did. It was here in Brooklyn somewhere. Bill's a good guy, man. Bill's a legend. The Apter Mags. If you're an old-school wrestling fan, right, a lot of people lived off those Apter magazines, man. Hey, Harry, thank you very much. And thank you all again for all the support. Come on back on Friday night after SmackDown for the post show, and we will recap all the happenings on that show and have some fun on Friday night. So be well, stay safe, and I will see you back here on Friday. And again, this weekend, don't forget, episode 876 of The Sound Off coming your way. I'll see you guys then.